Thank you so much for joining us, and it is a pleasure now to welcome Dr. Simon Targett. He is a writer, a historian, a media consultant, PhD in history from Cambridge, and he has served as a senior editor for the Financial Times. He is also the author of New World, Inc., along with John Buttman, co-author. Simon Targett joining us today. Dr. Targett, thank you so much.
Hi, Sinclair. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. This is just such a fun book. New World, Inc., The Making of America by England's Merchant Adventurers. For anybody who loves a good bit of history, well told and an intriguing tale, this is it. But you've just blown all assumptions out of the water. I grew up hearing that Plymouth Rock, the Mayflower landed. That was really the beginning of the English in North America, and we celebrate it over here, of course, with Thanksgiving and so forth.
Yes.
No, that's not the story at all.
Well, it remains an important part of the founding story, but as we tell in New World, Inc., the story can be taken back much earlier. And in a way, in order to try and understand America today, with you've got a businessman in the White House, you've got an incredible entrepreneurial culture. We thought that actually the pilgrims don't really tell you how that happened. And actually, when we further investigated that thesis, we discovered that there were a whole range of merchant adventurers, venture capitalists of their day, business people who were instrumental in masterminding a whole series of voyages, and we date that back to the 1550s, so before Queen Elizabeth I was on the throne in England. And this was an interesting period because Henry VIII, he of the six wives, had recently died, and England was facing a drastic economic crisis. And some of these merchants were facing economic ruin. Not only that, with the economy struggling, there was at that point the chance of Spain or France, who were in a way the superpowers of their day, invading England, which was a relatively small and peripheral country at that time, and taking it over, subsuming it into their empires. So the merchants came together and thought, right, what can we do? Our markets in Europe, and they were trading wool and cloth at that time, had collapsed. So they said, right, we've got to look further afield. We've got to go beyond Europe. And their dream was to get to China, or as they called it, Cathay. And that was for two reasons. One, they hoped that they would be able to sell their cloth and wool. And in parts of China, it can get very cold. But secondly, also, they thought of Cathay and China and the East as this miraculous place, source of silks, luxuries, spices, and so on. And so historically, they had got that by trading with Europeans who traveled through the silk route. But now they said, right, we've got to go there direct. And so that was the origin of that.
So some 70 years before the Mayflower.
Correct.
Is when we really started to see England start to venture out, and it was not a matter of religious persecution at that time. It was a matter of economics. It was that the English economy was based largely upon wool, and that one item was not enough to sustain the economy. They had to venture out, and of course, at that time, as you say, the allure of China. That was kind of a global situation, thanks to Marco Polo.
Absolutely, yes. And in fact, at that point, China was the biggest economy in the world. In fact, it's only been in the way the last 200 years where China hasn't been the biggest economy in the world. And at that point, it commanded something like 30% of GDP, India about 20-25%. So those two countries, which are now, of course, re-emerging as great trading nations, were historically the biggest in the world. As a contrast, England had barely 1% of global GDP, and the Italian Republic, so Venice, Florence, and so on, together they had something like 4% of global GDP. So China was absolutely the magnet and the dream for these merchants. But how do you get there? At that time, actually, the Portuguese and the Spanish had been trading with China kind of indirectly and eventually directly. But they commanded the southern routes, so that Spain commanded the route down under South America and the Magellan Straits. The Portuguese commanded the route under under Africa, the Cape of Good Hope route. And so those were taken, as it were. And so it left only other, the more challenging routes, as they thought, through the ice caps. First of all, they tried to go northeast over the Eurasian landmass, didn't get very far. And when they realized that that wasn't going to be an option, they then sought what they called the Northwest Passage, which then became, over the next 300 or 400 years, the great, you know, dream and fabled route that people could, if they could get to China that way, they would cut the time it took to get to that great land. Of course, they got stuck in the ice going that way over, you know, what is now the Canadian Arctic, but they settled in the end on the east coast of America and started to appreciate the great value of America, and particularly if they could settle there, the opportunities that would arise from that.
Even though there were great opportunities in the new lands of America, that was still not the goal. And in many ways, any settlements or any outposts along the way were nothing but outposts. The ultimate goal was still China. But you had to establish those outposts. So in some ways, this was a bit of a startup. This was a way for England to get to China. And to do that, they had to start up these businesses, start up these outposts along the way to achieve that long journey.
Yes. And in fact, you know, we often think of we think of this particular phase as a great business startup, and that America could almost be regarded as the first great, you know, national startup. And it required huge amounts of innovation and the best minds of the day. So the people that we describe in the book, we call the forgotten founders. So you have the Pilgrim Fathers, you have the founding fathers, but we think should add to this group the forgotten founders, who were in many cases the celebrated and famous people of their day, and often remembered still, but for other reasons. And they put their minds together. So the business people would bring in top scientists, great navigators, daring buccaneer sailors, in order to, first of all, get to America, and of course get to China. So the first job was to sort of get there. And once they'd, done that, you know, then the challenge was staying there, and all the challenges of building the society. But one of the things they did, and this underscores the fact that it was very much a business startup, was create almost the first modern company, the first forerunner for most modern corporations. And it traded under a rather wonderful name called, and it was long, called the Mystery Company and Fellowship of Merchant Adventurers for the Discovery of Regions, Dominions, Islands, and Places Unknown. Mystery pertained to the sense of mastery, a trade. And this was a joint stock company. So until that moment, many of the voyages that these merchants had funded across to Europe through the Mediterranean were either done as individual projects or done as syndicates. This was the first time that these merchants pooled their resources. And in fact, the word company comes from the Latin cum and panis, meaning loosely the sharing and the breaking of bread. And they got some of their ideas from the Venetians, from the Italian republics, who were at the forefront at that time of business enterprise.
The Venetians they were at the other end of the Silk Road, so they'd been at this for quite some time.
But yes, indeed.
First of all, what a marvelous name. The Mystery Company and Fellowship of Merchant Adventurers for the Discovery of Regions, Dominions, Islands, and Places Unknown. It's absolutely fantastic. But the idea that they had a stock company, essentially, And it was rather expensive for people to invest in this, but they actually managed to pull together probably in the neighborhood of a couple of hundred investors, and they
raised
about £6,000, as I recall reading.
Yeah, so first of all, they managed to get this large number of investors. And importantly, it wasn't just merchants and business people who invested, but this new structure allowed them to attract investment from wealthy gentlemen, rich aristocrats, who didn't particularly want to be involved in the day-to-day mundanity of running a company, but certainly would have appreciated, you know, hitting the jackpot if this company discovered some, you know, pot of gold or some, you know, a new source of silks.
More than that, a mountain of gold.
A mountain of gold, yes. Yes, as the Spanish had done in what was then Peru, but now Bolivia. So that was important. And then in terms of the £6,000, of course, £6,000 doesn't really convey the sort of size and value in today. We actually, there's a lot of debate about how do you compare currency then and now. But one way to do it is by comparison. So a laborer would typically, sort of a normal worker would typically command something in the order of £8 or £10 a year. But a individual share in this company was £25. So 2.5 times the annual salary of a typical worker.
Substantial investment.
Substantial investment. And the other point here is that even wealthy aristocrats didn't necessarily have lots of cash. It wasn't essentially a cash economy. Their wealth was in land, really. So even they didn't have lots of ready cash. So it was a sizable amount of cash that they required.
Now, an interesting point to this is that they kind of had to sell this new company, and that led to some new ideas. Marketing techniques were employed for this.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, again, marketing is just part and parcel of business now. It wasn't then. The first thing they did was create, in effect, a marketing brochure, arguably the first marketing brochure for a trading venture of this kind. They hired a brilliant scholar from Cambridge University, and he basically translated and sourced all the information he could possibly get about the journey that these merchants and sailors were going to take initially over the Northeast Passage. Later that became more sophisticated. So in addition to having pamphlets, in effect, brochures, they then commissioned a portrait artist. So what we might now think of as a photographer going along on an expedition. They then took a brilliant watercolorist called John White, whose work today can be seen in the British Library and is now regarded as high art. Of course, then it was simply to provide people with a visual presentation of the land in which they were going to either settle or trade. So there are wonderful pictures of Native Americans, the first pictures of Native Americans that had been seen by the English people in different settings as they were eating food, as they were farming their villages and so on. And so it made it real to many people.
Absolutely.
For the first time. And then there was one more technique that they had, which was then the extent to which they could invite people from America, Native Americans, to England. And probably the most famous one was Pocahontas, the Powhatan princess who came after Jamestown had been founded.
Huh. Hang on just a moment. Yeah, hang on just a moment. We've got more to cover, and we shall. The book is New World Inc., The Making of America by England's Merchant Adventurers. This is a rewrite of history here, and it's an intriguing story. New World Inc., by Simon Targett and John Buttman. We'll continue in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us, our guest today, Dr. Simon Targett. He is the author of New World Inc., along with John Buttman. New World Inc., The Making of America by England's Merchant Adventurers. And it tells an incredible story of what might have been the first joint stock company, the Mystery Company and Fellowship of Merchant Adventurers, and how they set sail looking initially for trade with China, ending up in the United States, what became the United States eventually, North America, and how the history of North America is really built upon these merchant adventurers. It is a business startup story, if you will. It required them to leverage their stock portfolio, if you will, into this incredible expedition. And they did that quite well, apparently. And there are some amazing characters in here. I know we don't have time to run through all of them, but you actually start out the book by listing some 75 major characters. There had to be an amazing confluence of things going on for these people of disparate skills to come together for this kind of a goal.
Yes. So we identify about 75 people, many of whom are related with each other across three generations, across the 70 years. And you have people that will be familiar to your listeners, people like Sir Walter Raleigh, Pocahontas, of course. But then there were other people like a man called Sir Thomas Smith, who will be less known, less well known. But he was the governor, the chief executive of Virginia, of the Virginia Company. But he was one of the most famous business people of his day. He was instrumental in ensuring that Jamestown, which was founded about 13 years before the Pilgrims arrived, ensured that Jamestown really survived some tricky early years. But interestingly, he also ensured that over time, some of the civic institutions that are part and parcel of a thriving society were introduced. So you can trace back some of the great institutions in America to these business people. So the first democratic representative assembly, which was the House of Burgesses in Jamestown, was established by these merchants, which continued through to the Revolution. You have the first series of legal statutes introduced by these people, these merchants, in particular Thomas Smith. So that's interesting. Then you have somebody else called Sir Humphrey Gilbert, who was a gentleman merchant adventurer who had this great vision that England could settle in America initially as a trading post. And he pursued his dream, found investment, and so on. But his story ended badly at the bottom of the Atlantic when he was struck by storms on the way back from having founded Newfoundland. And he is remembered actually by Winston Churchill as the first English pioneer of the West. So he's partly well known, but also not as well known as he ought to be.
There's some truly amazing characters in this book, and you bring them to life. So that's the job of a writer, and you've accomplished it very well. Simon Targett and John Buttman, the new book is entitled New World Inc., The Making of America by England's Merchant Adventurers. And it is just intriguing, particularly if you love history and finance and business as well. This is a great blend of those topics. And it will change how you look at the history of North America and the United States, and might explain why we are in the business of business in the United States. New World Inc., John Buttman, and our guest today, Dr. Simon Targett. It has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sinclair.